There was another man that Jesus healed in John 9. I'd like to read that. This was a man born blind. It doesn't say that Bartimaeus was born blind. I assume that, I guess, because of this thing here in John. That Bartimaeus was a man that was healed, and this other man with no name was also healed. But let's read here John 9 about this other one here. Verse 1, "And as Jesus passed by, he saw a man which was blind from his birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Jesus answered, Neither hath this man sinned nor his parents, but that the works of God should be made manifest in him. I must work the works of him that sent me while it is day. The night cometh when no man can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world." Blindness is darkness, and Jesus is the light of the world. That principle is something I'd like to remember throughout the message today. Verse 6, "When he had thus spoken, he spat on the ground and made clay of the spittle, and he anointed the eyes of the blind man with the clay. And he said unto him, Go wash in the pool of Siloam, which is by interpretation sent." I thought that was interesting. The Siloam means sent. So the man washed in the pool that was named sent. "He went his way therefore and washed and came seeing. The neighbors therefore, and they which before had seen him that was blind, said, Is not this he that sat and begged? Some said, This is he. Others said, He is like him. But he said, I am he. Therefore, said they unto him, How were thine eyes opened? He answered and said, A man that's called Jesus made clay and anointed mine eyes and said unto me, Go to the pool of Siloam and wash. And I went and washed, and I received sight. Then said they unto him, Where is he? He said, I know not. They brought to the Pharisees him that aforetime was blind. And it was the Sabbath day when Jesus made the clay and opened his eyes. Then again the Pharisees also asked him how he had received his sight. He said unto him, He put clay upon mine eyes, and I washed and do see, because he keepeth not the Sabbath day. Others said, How can a man that is a sinner do such miracles? And there was a division among them. They say unto the blind man again, What sayest thou of him, that he hath opened thine eyes? He said, He is a prophet. But the Jews did not believe concerning him, that he had been blind and received his sight, until they called the parents of him that had received his sight. And they asked them, saying, Is this your son, who ye say was born blind? How then doth he now see? His parents answered them and said, We know that this is our son, and that he was born blind. But by what means he now seeth, we know not, or who hath opened his eyes, we know not. He is of age, ask him, he shall speak for himself. These words spake his parents, because they feared the Jews. For the Jews had agreed already, that if any man did confess that he was Christ, he should be put out of the synagogue. Therefore, said his parents, He is of age, ask him. Then again called they the man that was blind, and said unto him, Give God the praise, we know that this man is a sinner. He answered and said, Whether he be a sinner or no, I know not. One thing I know, that whereas I was blind, now I see. Then said they to him again, What did he to thee? How opened he thine eyes? He answered them, I have told you already, and you did not hear. Wherefore would ye hear it again? Will you also be his disciples? Then they reviled him and said, Thou art his disciple, but we are Moses' disciples. We know that God spake to Moses. As for this fellow, we know not from whence he is. The man answered and said unto them, Why, herein is a marvelous thing, that ye know not from whence he is, and yet he hath opened mine eyes. Now we know that God heareth not sinners, but if any man be a worshipper of God and doeth his will, him he heareth. Since the world began, was it not heard that any man opened the eyes of one that was born blind? If this man were not of God, he could do nothing. They answered and said unto him, Thou wast altogether born in sins, and dost thou teach us? And they cast him out. Jesus heard that they had cast him out, and when he had found him, he said unto him, Dost thou believe on the Son of God? He answered and said, Who is he, Lord, that I might believe on him? And Jesus said unto him, Thou hast both seen him, and it is he that talketh with thee. And he said, Lord, I believe. And he worshipped him. And Jesus said, For judgment I am come into this world, for this judgment I am come into this world, that they which see not might see, and they which see might be made blind. And some of the Pharisees which were with him heard these words, and said unto him, Are we blind also? Jesus said unto them, If you were blind, ye should have no sin. But now ye say, We see. Therefore, your sin remaineth. This story is interesting for several reasons. One, blindness is darkness. A person that's blind cannot see. There's no light, nothing. The eye does not translate the signals that it sees to anything the brain can recognize. Whether the eye is dead or something that happens in that mechanism there, the brain does not recognize what the eye sees. And so the man, he was born blind. They didn't know what was wrong with him other than that he could not see. The other thing that was unique is that they assumed that anything good came from God. And the question was, who is the man? The Pharisees didn't want to recognize that he was a good man because he healed contrary to the law. The law said, do not work on the Sabbath. And so because he broke that commandment, then he was bad. And because he was bad, they didn't know where he came from, supposedly. But from the blind man's perspective, the thing that happened to him was the best thing in the world. So this man has to be of God because it was a good thing that happened to him. Someone had a devotional here recently on this, and I'm not meaning to go over all this again. But the thing that I was wanting, the title I'd like to make of the message is called Blind Spots. Blind spots. The Pharisees could see. And they, in their mind, they had knowledge. But they also had a blind spot. And the blind spot was that they could not reconcile or did not want to reconcile something good happening out of context of the order of the law. Blindness is the inability to see. It is darkness. But in our life, are we like the Pharisees sometimes when we think we have knowledge and we think we have our framework that we work in our life? We have a framework of familiarity. We have a framework of right and wrong. And sometimes we live in a, I'm going to call it a checklist mentality. We check this and this and this and this, and so therefore we're right. We're right, or we're living for God because we do this. And yet there's blind spots can be in our life. We can be blind to things that we should really be living out or working on, and we're not because it doesn't fit into our checklist of life. Blind spots are dangerous. And in a vehicle, when we're driving down the road, and I've had this happen already, my first car had a tremendous blind spot on it where a vehicle could come up. There's a certain spot where a vehicle could be, and you couldn't see it without looking over your shoulder. And if you would drift over into the other lane when there's a vehicle there, there would be horns honking and people, yeah, it's not a good thing. And I've had that happen too, where people drift over if I happen to be in a blind spot. But blind spots are dangerous. We all have the potential for blind spots in our life. We have areas of light, areas that we know right and wrong, and yet we also have areas that we're ignorant in. And ignorance is not necessarily bliss. It feels like bliss because we don't know what we don't know. But when we find out that we don't know it, what do we do with it? Then we have a choice what to do with it. What are some blind spots that happen in life? What are some blind spots that we can have? Sometimes blind spots, we sense that there's something that's not quite there, not quite right. I'd like to look at one. I'm not going to necessarily turn to the reference here, but in Genesis 2, there was a conversation that Eve had with a snake. And the conversation, I don't know how long of a time frame that this conversation went on. But Adam had been given instruction from God. I don't know if Adam had it before Eve was or not. I don't know if the order is all correct or is all in order of time. But in the Bible, God had given Adam instructions on what fruit to eat before it records Eve's creation. So I would assume that God had given Adam the instruction and Adam communicated it to Eve on what trees, what fruit to eat of. But in that conversation, Eve mentioned that she was aware of the instruction, but after the talk with the snake there, with the spirit there, she believed that her life would be improved if she would eat of this fruit. She was deceived, and she ate of it thinking that it would make life better. She was acting on, I'm going to say, new revelations from a spirit. And deception is kind of like that. If we stray from what we know and we start rationalizing things out, we can make just about anything sound good. And we can make just about anything sound like it would be a blessing or a positive thing. And it's a blind spot, or it can be a blind spot, to all of us. None of us are immune to deception. And deception is something that we all can face at any time. Just a small thing. I received a phone call one time from a man, or someone had called trying to sell copier toner, and they acted like I had a subscription for copier toner. Well, I had just moved to Dad's place. I figured Dad had the subscription. So I said, sure, send it. So they sent the toner. And they sent a bill along with it. $400 for a $36 toner. Well, I should have done some homework first, but I was taken in. But we worked it out. They graciously took the toner back after I explained that I wasn't going to pay $400 for it. And they, yeah. But I was taken in. And we all can be taken in. We can all be deceived at some point. It's whether you buy $400 copier toner isn't a life and death matter necessarily, but how we adjust our life and how we live our life can be based on what we listen to. Deception is like carbon monoxide. It can be an odorless, colorless, fatal thing. It's hard to smell, it's hard to see, and it can give a real headache. And it can also be fatal. But light, living our life with Christ's light, can be an antidote there. For I'd like to turn to Romans 2 here. There's a difference between living in a checklist mentality and living in the Spirit. And I'm going to try to explain it. Sometimes I get confused on it myself. But Romans 2, let's break in here in verse 17, I believe. Yeah, verse 17. It says, "Behold, thou art called a Jew, and restest in the law, and makest thy boast of God, and knowest his will, and approvest the things that are more excellent, being instructed out of the law, and art confident that thou thyself art a guide of the blind, a light of them which are in darkness, an instructor of the foolish, a teacher of babes, which hast the form of knowledge and of the truth in the law. Thou therefore, which teachest another, teachest thou not thyself? Thou that preachest a man should not steal, dost thou steal? Thou that sayest a man should not commit adultery, dost thou commit adultery? Thou that abhorrest idols, dost thou commit sacrilege? Thou that makest thy boast of the law, through breaking the law, dishonorest thou God? For the name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles through you, as it is written." In other words, I'm enlightened. I know right from wrong. I know how things should be. I know what my life should be like. I know what your life should be like. More to the point, I know what you should do. And I have the Word of God to prove how you should live. But if I don't follow it, if I'm just well-versed in Scripture, and I'm well-versed in helping other people live right, but I don't follow it, or make exceptions for myself, then the name of God is blasphemed. The name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles through you, as it is written, "For circumcision verily profiteth, if thou keep the law, but if thou be a breaker of the law, thy circumcision is made uncircumcision." And I'm going to translate the word circumcision, and this may, I'm not hoping not to take this out of context, but in the word, we could say, as a Christian and as being a worldly person. You can just say that. For the name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles through you, as it is written, "For being a Christian truly profiteth if you keep the word. But if you be a breaker of the word, then your Christianity is made unchristianity." I don't know if that makes sense or not, but it's speaking to the Jews, he was saying, as you as a Pharisee that's enlightened, if you break the law, then your holy law-keeping is made as a Gentile. And shall not uncircumcision, which is by nature, shall not the worldly people, which are by nature, if they fulfill the law, should they not judge you, who by the letter and circumcision do transgress the law? You that know how to live, if you transgress the law, the ones that don't have the law but are actually living right will judge you. And shall not, for he is not a Jew, which is one outwardly. Neither is that circumcision, which is outward in the flesh, but he is a Jew, which is one inwardly. And circumcision is that of the heart, in the spirit, and not in the letter, whose praise is not of men, but of God. So, righteousness is not something that we get from following a checklist, or living a culture, or doing everything right. But it's an inward focus. It's a letting the light of Christ shine in our heart. And we're not perfect. We know that. But what do we do when the light of Christ shines in our heart and we see a dark spot? A dark spot means that there is a break with the light somewhere. A blind spot. A man after God's own heart is not one that is perfect, but it's one who sees when there is a blind spot, is one who takes the necessary steps to remove it, to make it light, to let that light shine in there. We could say he is a Christian, which is one inwardly, and Christianity is that of the heart in the spirit, and not in the letter, whose praise is not of men, but of God. So a blind spot that we can see, or that we have, could be culture. Sometimes our culture can get in our way here. Because we have a rich heritage, many blessings that have been handed down to us. And without each generation taking a fresh, committed look at following Christ, we can turn into what it's talking about here, where we are a Jew outwardly. We can do it. In Sunday school this morning, there was a thought given that persecution would be a benefit to the church. And it would, in the sense that half-hearted people would make a decision to either be in or get out. It would weed out many half-hearteds. People that we would not, it would make a line more distinct between Christian and non-Christian. Culture has its place. With a heritage that we have, I'm not throwing the heritage away, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying that if we inherit a well-oiled machine, but the engine quits running, then the gears are going to keep spinning for a while. But with the engine running, we can pass it on to another generation. Culture can blind us. We can excuse things that should not be excused. That's the blind spot of culture. because that's just the way we do things. And one thing that we tend to do, we tend to rate sin according to our own standards or our own understanding or what seems right to us. It can be a tendency. And the sins of murder, adultery, and that kind of sin, those are really, 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 really bad. But we can do other things that are, in God's eyes, really, really, really bad, but they look more right to us. One, you know, pride is something that God hates. Pride is extremely repulsive to God. Lucifer was thrown out of heaven because of pride. He said, "I will make myself like the Most High." And pride is something that God hates extremely. And human nature tends to just, we can dress it up into all kinds of nice looking things that look well. Sometimes some of us have the habit of sharing concerns. Well, we call it concerns to give us legitimate reason to share juicy stories about people. Did you hear, "Oh, things are just really bad with so-and-so. We just don't like the way things are going there. But did you hear, you know, what it happened, what the latest was here?" I mean, we just go ahead because we've cloaked it in a concern, and then we can throw the gossip in there under the sheet. Another thing that can be a blind spot is skirting, or we say we're law-abiding people, but we can skirt laws sometimes or mandates because we know better. And we can do it cheerfully and with a smile. And if we do that cheerfully and with a smile, does it make it any less wrong? Not necessarily. It does not make it any less wrong. But we tend to rate things according to our own understanding. And if other people are doing it and it doesn't bother them, then we think it's okay. That's where culture can be somewhat of a blind spot to us. Another thing that can be somewhat of a blind spot, and this is something I'm not quite sure how to say, so I'm just going to say it, and I really hope that express what I'm saying without being unclear. But we tend to be influenced by what we immerse ourselves in. As Christians, as people, as Anabaptist people, we are influenced by what we immerse ourselves in. And as we immerse ourselves in the news, some of us have a real fascination, and I have found myself doing this, and so this is my take on myself. But immersion in news, just a nonstop immersion in news, not all of these are things that I do, but or let's say online, just videos, movies, electronic games. If you just constantly immerse yourself into that, it can break down conviction because we are not necessarily, we're just being bombarded by the content of what we're consuming. It can break down convictions, shape our values to those of the content that we get. And we don't really even realize it because it's so incremental. It's small. But for, and it happens in society around us. Take the whole thing of the gay rights movement. 100 or 50 years ago, that would have been absolutely across the board. It's not going to happen. But it seems like the more the agenda is put out and the more it's just widely accepted and influential people endorse it and just constantly on and on and on, it becomes more of a propaganda tool that influences public opinion. And by us consuming the same content on a immersive basis, that's just an on, just living in it, our values can be shaped the same way, little by little. We know better in our head, but our heart is drawn. It becomes more of a disconnect there. And that can be a tremendous blind spot to us. And it can get worse if we're not aware of it. I just use the gay rights movement or gay rights thing as a illustration. But there's other things that can, that the same thing applies, can happen in that setting. Immersion in political news, analysis, and opinion. You know, some people have opinions, and other people have opinions. But have we ever stopped to think that our opinions are often influenced by other people as well? We like to think our opinions are our own, but a lot of times our opinions are strengthened by hearing everybody else's opinions, and sometimes they're even tweaked. And I think in that can come from immersing ourselves in that content as well. How does that work? We are called to be in the world but not of the world, and yet we are influenced by a constant flood of the information we immerse ourselves in. In politics, we tend to look at as evil the party or candidate we disagree with, and good the party or candidate that we agree with. Now, does God look at it the same way? Does he? Does God immerse himself in Fox News or CNN or whatever? I know he knows what's going on, but God is not influenced like humans tend to be. How does it make us feel when propaganda comes in the mailbox? We got some propaganda years ago, I think in the 2000 election. I don't know where it came from, but it was a flyer to vote a certain way, or the Bibles are all going to disappear. And it had a list of doomsday things coming that was going to happen if we didn't vote for the list of people that we're supposed to vote for. But how does it make us feel? If I was minded that way, I would agree with him. If I was not minded, I would say that's wrong. We are conditioned to what we are immersed in. What about when calls come to boycott certain companies to punish their bad behavior because of, well, who defines what bad behavior is? And who defines why we do it? And why are we, is it right for us to do that? Sometimes our thinking is conditioned by what we have been, by the propaganda we've allowed into our life. Those can be blind spots that we can become involved in that we aren't aware of. We're all susceptible to blind spots by immersing ourselves in other things and becoming distracted. With Jesus being the light of the world, Job preached a message here several weeks ago, on being a disciple. And being a disciple is taking hold of Christ's teachings in the Spirit and doing it in not because it's a checklist that we check off, but we make it a part of our core. We make it a part of our life. And let that light shine in. Serving Him in that capacity requires immersion in studying and living what Christ would have us to live. And analyzing some of these other things that we talked about, the I'm going to call it propaganda that we face, and that's advertisements, news, just the onslaught of things that are out there. But how do we filter that through the lens of how God would look at it? It requires immersion of studying God's word and His ways. And living by the Spirit does not simply mean just an assent that, yes, I believe, but it requires action as well. Action because of the Spirit, not action because we're checking off the list. And by the way, just a side note, when it comes time, many people have the attitude that 10% of what we make is God's and the rest is mine. And that's fine if you're living on a checklist mentality, but there's other problems that come with it. All of it's God's. And we give account for how we use our money. We also give account for how we use our time, how we use our life that God has given us, and how we use the talents, the whole blessing of oxygen and eyes and everything that God has given us. We give account for that. But living by the Spirit requires action and results in action. If God sends us, heals us from blindness, which He will, He can, and sends us to the pool of Siloam to wash the blind spots away, we are then sent to share that with others. As we allow God's light to shine in our lives, then we can reflect it into others' lives. Let's stand for prayer.